sports in the afternoon. This is The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
I think the bigger question is, you know, is Franzen going to be here at the start of the year? You know, obviously, the relationship between team and player is not easy. They've had some contract battles for a few years in a row now. You know, it's pretty clear he wasn't happy at points last year, and they weren't happy with him. But, you know, he's a right shot guy who can score points, and those guys are hard to find. You know, you see more and more situations around the league now, and Toronto is one of the teams where they're really working hard to try to get a right-left balance. And, you know, Franzen is a right-shot guy who can score, although the Maple Leafs, I think, would like to see him shoot a little bit more. You know, those guys are important to have. I mean, the tough thing right now is, and I think there have been some teams sniffing around Franzen, and I think Calgary, for example, was one. And, you know, the Maple Leafs know they can't just give the guy away. He's too talented. But the other teams know, you know, am I going to give up a piece for somebody who's a year away from testing the market? And look at how well defensemen just did. I mean, nobody made a bigger killing in free agency this year than defensemen. So I think, you know, the Maple Leafs are in a bit of a tough spot. Teams that are trying to trade with them are in a bit of a tough spot. And I think if he does start the year this year, I always think if you have familiarity there, like a guy like Horacek, I do believe it helps.
There you go. That is Elliot Friedman on our sister station, The Fan 590. Cody Franzen avoiding arbitration, signing a new deal with the Toronto Maple Leafs today worth $3.3 million, a one-year deal. Of course, at one point was dangled to the Montreal Canadiens for Josh Georges. Georges would not waive to go to Toronto. You heard Elliot mention the Calgary Flames, and I'm not surprised. I think the Flames have probably realistically called about everybody and anybody connected to the National Hockey League, but they too would covet a right-handed shot defenseman. Here we are. We start the arbitration season, and again, we saw Sobotka, who's not even in the league this year. He did go to arbitration and was awarded $1.4 million. But other than that, Franzen avoiding it, something tells me we're going to have at least a handful of guys going through the ARB process this year, Bruce.
Well, it'll be a change of pace then if they actually get into that room.
Because it normally doesn't happen,
no,
right?
No, lately it's all been on the doorstep. I talked to a couple agents, knowing that you wanted to talk about this today. To a couple agents today. They don't feel it necessarily should be any difference this year except for the O'Reilly thing. That's a wild card that nobody's willing to kind of...
And I want to talk about that in a second, but what about PK Subban? Because Subban is scheduled to go August 1st.
6'1", 6'1.5".
Yeah. He's one of the last guys to go.
He's good.
He's very good.
Yes.
His current deal paid him $3.75 million, which we were told was supposed to be a bridge contract.
Yes.
Held out a little bit at the start of the lockout shortened season, signed, you know, has been right there in the Norris Trophy conversation, went over to Sochi, didn't play a lot for Team Canada, which I'm sure, you know, some will look at. But this is a guy, based on what we've seen in free agency and other places, Bruce, that was probably expecting to get paid north of $8 million a year.
Yeah. Well, you put your finger on it, and I think Elliot did too. You know, the guys aren't perfect. The defensemen aren't perfect. But it's always a question of, okay, well, what do you replace him with? So you don't like P.K. Subban. He has warts. He has this. You don't like the whatever. Okay, go out and find a guy who's going to skate those minutes, that production, et cetera, who will be less trouble. And who you can afford. So this is one of the reasons why people feel like a guy like Subban is going to try to, whatever the max salary is, he's going to test it over the next few years.
Yeah.
Because they know that. And it's, you know, the Dion Phaneuf thing in Toronto. Ah, get rid of Dion Phaneuf. Yeah, he's killing our league. I said, well, that's fine. Find a guy who's going to skate 27 minutes a game and do the kind of work he does. And then tell me fine. Because those guys are, what would you say, Rob? There's about three dozen of them in the NHL maybe who can do top 2 minutes and not completely kill you?
Right. I think it goes this way. I think true dominant number one centers are the hardest thing to find.
Right.
Hard to play against number one centers. I think good, competitive, consistent starting goalies are number two. And then I think that difference maker.
But the goalies ahead of the defenseman, eh?
I do. I think that.
I might have in the past, but I'm more inclined, again, because of scarcity, to put the defenseman ahead of him. In terms of value.
I'm just going off the top of my head. I'm thinking,
because you can find goalies.
Well, but you get to a point, don't you, where you know, is Kari Ramo a starting goalie? I don't. He is on a 27th place team. I'm not sure.
Right.
To be the one thing that has altered my way of thinking is
But if you had wanted a guy, you could have had Ryan Miller this summer. You know, you obviously went and signed a guy, but you could have had a guy who would be
right.
You
but
there.
But
those
how,
guys are
but,
available.
But how many of them were available?
Enough that the teams could have satisfied themselves. Calgary satisfied themselves to a certain extent at a lower level. The Canucks obviously satisfied
but
themselves.
But I think it's the same.
How many guys are getting a number one or even two defensemen this summer in any kind of significant deal?
Yeah.
But it's Bupkis. Those guys never move.
Yeah. We could probably go down this path, and I could probably agree with you. I just think that there's, when it comes to goalies, I still think there's a plateau. I think you do hit a point in time where they aren't the same as the Lundqvist, the Quicks. You know, to me, I was so quick. I was going to put Corey Crawford in that group, and then his postseason, you kind of go, well, I'm not sure he belongs in the same category as Jonathan Quick.
I'd like to see Jonathan Quick play behind Edmonton's defense before I pronounce him as being more valuable than a number one guy.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
You know,
but
I'm not saying he's not a terrific goalie. But
as I go through defensemen, I mean, you know, Char is still in that top echelon now.
Sure.
Subban, Carlson. I think McDonough's joining that group. Doughty. But
Andrew,
then again,
Andrew Ferentz.
What?
Andrew
Ferentz. Sorry. I'm sorry. No, we're not just talking about guys who play the position.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, you might be right, Bruce. I'll tell you this about PK Subban. I'm a PK Subban guy.
Yeah.
And I think there are a lot of, you know, I think he's a very polarizing player. We've seen that since the start of his career. Hell, we saw that in junior. I remember him getting absolutely destroyed during the World Junior broadcasts about the risks that he took.
Right.
And he'd never be able to do that at the next level and all this garbage. And, you know, all he's done is won a Norris Trophy.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm fascinated, but I look at PK Subban, and if he went to Colorado, what that team would become instantly to me, they just would be, that would put them over the hump as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. You know, I don't think he goes to Ottawa and does that because you've got Henrik Karlsson, now you got to share a puck. I don't think he goes to L.A. because I think, again, you're not going to play ahead of Doughty. But I look at a team like the Colorado with so much in so many different places and serviceable, good young, but I don't see anything as dynamic as P.K. Subban.
And here's the other thing about Subban to me is that he's a guy who can play in Montreal. Montreal torches 95% of guys eventually. I think that Subban's just of a nature that he can stick that out. A friend
there's a value to that.
A guy in the hockey business calls him an opera defenseman. I said, what do you mean? Me. I said, but you know what? What that is confidence for him, right? It is pretty cheesy. But it's his confidence, and that allows him to be in a Canadian market and look at all these guys and not wet his pants about it. And there's a lot of guys who can't do that anymore and don't want to do that anymore. And it's
I don't disagree with that point at all.
Yeah.
You know,
another reason he's valuable to the Canadiens.
So let me ask you this. Does P.K. Subban go to arbitration?
I don't think so. I think both sides are like, you know, his guys are not. It's not the first rodeo for the Newport people. They know how this works, and the team certainly knows how it works. And we're just going to see how it goes to the last minute. And then this is how far we've gotten. Fine, we'll call it a day.
I don't see
and
any.
Start talking about the next one.
I don't see anything that is in front of him. That like there's nobody that I see that's going to be precedent setting in front of him.
Right.
Right. I think the Ryan O'Reilly, you know, again, it comes back to we all believe right now that there's no way Ryan O'Reilly's not going to arbitration.
Right.
We're all on that same page.
If anybody's going to do it, it'll be him.
Is O'Reilly playing in Colorado a year from now?
He certainly has value to be traded. And he's certainly a guy who I can look at and say, you know what, you can find someone who can do what he does.
Right.
There's not a ton of them, but you can find guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like my argument about defensemen. So I would tend to agree with you, a year from now he's too much of a pain in the butt.
So if not there, where? What can you get for Ryan O'Reilly right now?
Well, of course, I haven't done the prep work on looking at the teams that would want him and have things to move.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, a certain hockey team in this city indicated
it's
love of him in the past.
Yeah.
And they have now started to build up a little bit of a base of prospects. There's some possibilities there. But O'Reilly's a guy who has to be handled to a certain extent. He's clearly a guy who has to be managed. would Calgary be that kind of a city? I don't know.
See, to me,
he'd fit in Toronto, where you know your core group is all guys like him.
Yeah,
like Dion.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder about him as is he a straight up trade? I mean, is this a trade where you could, you know, bring back one player of, you know, maybe a defenseman? Like, I don't think you trade him to Montreal straight up for PK Subban, but could you trade him to another organization for, you know, a top end defenseman?
Hockey trade,
right? As opposed to a package,
right?
Right. We've seen package for Kessler.
I don't see a one for one.
More of a package.
Yeah. Yeah, I the more I think of it now, I think I said it facetiously, but I think the Maple Leafs are a team that need to do something fast to get this core to where it's got to be.
Right.
Because they have issues. Their clock is ticking a little bit too. And you know, they're all sitting there now. I was saying this earlier, but they're all sitting there now kind of getting themselves all emotional about, that Steven Stamkos, the Toronto boy, is going to come home in a few years, et cetera. And I said, who, what, where, when, why? First of all, it's 2 years from now. You want to wait? I don't think the Leafs want to wait. That's not a city that waits. So a guy like O'Reilly for the Maple Leafs, possibilities. They certainly could use a guy like him.
So I want to make sure I understand this correctly. You're telling me that people are taking the fact that he favorited a tweet.
Yes.
That talked about him coming back to Toronto as some sort of divine
indication
guidance.
That
this is actually so. We better start putting a guy on the Stamkos beat.
Well, it's the marriage of Maple Leaf fans and Twitter, which I guess is the reductio ad absurdum to nothing. But anyhow, yes, it got them going.
And this, just for those who don't know the story, this is kind of the fallout of LeBron James deciding to go back to Cleveland. Somebody tweeted that, wow, wonder if, you know, Steve Stamkos would ever come home, and Stamkos favorited the tweet, and lo and behold, the countdown clock has begun.
Now, it's possible, but if you want to win, we were agreeing earlier, Tampa's a place where you're going to win a lot sooner than you're going to win in Toronto.
Let me ask you this, because
Toronto's on the treadmill.
Certainly,
and they're going to fire their coach and their general manager the next 12 months too. Plus, they've got Brendan Shanahan running it.
What it really sounds like is we need to take some time and put it aside for Toronto. I want to go back to Ryan O'Reilly.
Yes, sir.
We both agree that he will go. What's the scenario in which he doesn't? Can they repair this? Can this rift? Can this divide that appears to be there? Can that be fixed?
Well, we just talked about the CFL and people being bitter and stuff, and people have the capacity to be bitter. I still, as much as I know you're convinced, I still find it hard to believe they're going to go through that door into that room and have any of that kind of talk with this guy.
Okay.
It just seems to me to be a powder keg.
Okay.
And I think they know what they've got in the short term. The thing I admire about the Colorado guys, the new guys running it, they seem to know what they want to do, and they seem to be pretty sure about what kind of guys they want.
Yep.
And I'm getting the sense they don't want O'Reilly there, but they also don't want to create a problem that they have no immediate solution for.
Right.
So I'm still not sure they're going through the door, Rob.
You think this is possibly avoided? You think that they may avoid arbitration?
I think outside in the green room, as we like to say in the entertainment business, there could be a conversation, and okay, let's go home.
Well, I can't say as I disagree with the fact that I don't think you can operate with definitives anymore. I don't think you can say anything is for sure. The fact that we're talking about a player that was holding out, got the offer sheet, they begrudgingly matched. It was as soon as, because we were in Colorado, we were in Denver that night, and I remember the first period had barely ended before the news come down that the Avs had matched and were moving on, and then... You know, it was before the end of the second period that this was going to. They were already talking about this. They were already talking about coming out the other side of this deal and what would it mean. And here we are. We're there. I mean, for the longest time, they couldn't move the kid until last February. They haven't moved him to this point, but they're not even talking right now, according to the reporters in Colorado. But as you say, you show up on the steps.
And who's repping him? Who's his agent? O'Reilly? I mean, I don't know that off the top of my head. That'll have something to do with it too. If it's somebody who knows how these things work, that'll be significant too.
Yeah, I just think this is going to come down to an arbitrator, and then they'll move him.
Well, then we'll put a Starbucks on it.
Oh, I thought you said you felt this was going to go to arbitration.
I said if any one of them did, it would be him.
It would be him.
It would be him.
But him specifically, you don't. as you sit here right
those,
now.
Yeah.
No, no, but specifically as you sit here right now, you anticipate this would be solved before it goes to arbitration.
That's what I'm thinking. Because nobody seems to be doing them anymore, and there's a good reason why. But if he wants to put his fingers into the fan and they want to do that for him, that's fine.
Yeah,
they're an interesting team. They did so many good things last year to rehab their image in the city. Do you want to turn all that sideways by having a moaning and gnashing of teeth session in the media because of this? It would seem very short-sighted. Yeah, you could win maybe on the arbitration, but what would you do in the long run?
They are one of the probably the top couple of teams worth watching next year, because I really don't have a.
Could go either way.
Well, I was waiting for the shoe to drop all year, and all they did was get better.
Yeah, yeah. But
until the postseason.
Yeah, but you know that sometimes teams, it's not till the next season that fallback happens.
Yeah. So, absolutely.
This is sort of like Rory on the weekend about his Fridays, and you know.
Okay, so everybody was kind of holding their breath on Saturday?
Yeah, on Friday, it's that, and it's the same thing here, you know.
Yeah.
We're waiting for them to take the step back. They may never. But I have a sense that their depth and the kind of team that they have so far, that they may have a little stumble back.
That last day, August 1st, Joe Colburn of the Flames is scheduled to go to arbitration. Did it even make the steps? I don't. I think this is one that we hear about this week.
Isn't that J.P. Barry? Is one of his guys?
Yes.
J.P. is usually
he's a deal maker.
Yeah, he brings things down to the last minute. There's a really good book coming out this fall about his negotiations on one particular pair of twins.
Really?
Yeah. Great detail in it.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Fascinating.
When's that coming out, you said? The name of that book again? Me and JP?
The name of the book has changed since the original.
Oh, has it? Okay.
We've had a couple of changes in that book. I don't know.
Right.
The star of the movie.
Yes.
Basically was kicked off the set at the end.
Yeah, well, we'll certainly be having the author in to talk about that. We'll take a break when we come back.
I'll see if I can find him.
The Battle of Alberta rages on. At least that's what the hope of the round, the CFL, is. This Thursday night, kicking off week 5 in the CFL, it will be the Stampeders and the Eskimos. We'll take a look at what it means when we come back. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
NHL, CFL, NFL, MLB, NLL, WHL, and lots more letters. We cover them all. Sportsnet 960, The FAN. Talking sports in the afternoon. This is The Big Show on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
They're playing good football. They've had the luxury of playing against two very, very young quarterbacks, and we can't overlook that. But regardless, I mean, they get paid to play. Our players get paid to play and to focus and play good defense, and that's what they've been playing.
So the Stampeders defense getting a little bit of a somewhat of an endorsement from John Hofnagel today.
Oh, so that's him talking about his own defense.
Yeah,
oh, I thought he was talking about Edmonton.
I know, because you're listening to it, because you didn't hear it the first time. You weren't in the room. I played this right off the top.
It is.
I mean, it was your reaction was priceless. Shot across the bow.
For Huff to say anything like that.
Nope.
Injury.
Nope.
Oh, darn.
That's talking about his own guys. They've been okay. I haven't played, the quarterbacks.
Two young quarterbacks.
Well, they looked really good against Ricky Ray, but he's absolutely right. You know, and that's where we talked about the CFL before, and let's deal with what lays in front of us, which is a Thursday meeting between the 4-0 Chris Jones-led Eskimos and the 3-0 John Hofnagel's presents the Calgary Stampeders. There is such a hunger, I think, from everybody involved, from the players to the water boys to the ticket sellers to the broadcasters to the media, the writers. Everybody wants the Battle of Alberta to be relevant again, and we have... Here we have this opportunity on Thursday to have a real knockdown, drag-out affair that'll set the tone for Labor Day,
right,
and that this battle will continue all year long. Is it realistic?
Well, what I saw of Edmonton the other night against Winnipeg didn't give them much of a fight, so it was hard to assess them.
Yeah,
I think you're going to see a spirited game. By the way, the first game in Edmonton played on the non-grass, the fake grass, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is the new surface. How does that affect it? Because you remember you used to go up to Edmonton and they'd have that thick grass,
yep,
and when the Stamps would have a fast team, they'd water the grass and it would be like mud by the time you got up there. So it might be a little faster track, which would suit the Stampeders. The potential is there on both sides. The sticking point will be, as they call him in Edmonton, is bi-level Mitchell. Does he have the you know, whatever.
I'm sorry, bi-level Mitchell?
The bridge.
Oh, yes, okay, yeah.
You lived in Edmonton.
I did, and I didn't get that reference, but now I do. Goodness. That's smart.
Just whether he has the fortitude to hang in there and to be able to hit guys and stuff. And
well,
the Hamilton game didn't speak well to that.
I eavesdropped on your conversation in the 1 o'clock hour, and I want to go somewhere where you went, which was you were maybe expecting to see Drew Tate in that game.
What I had understood the situation was going to be is that we were going to see a little bit of both guys, and that even though Mitchell had been given the job, mm-hmm. we were going to see more than just third down dashes from Tate.
Yep.
And I thought this was a perfect example that offense needed a spark, and maybe it was Huff, maybe it was Dickinson, but they didn't pull that trigger. They kept the kid in there the whole time, and I thought that was really, really interesting.
Telling.
Yeah.
To me, it spoke volumes of, you know, where – because I go back to that last preseason game in B.C., and remember, the battle's on. We haven't made up our mind. You know, we've got the incumbent. We've got the young gunslinger. Go at her, boys. And what I remember that game is that Bo Levi Mitchell did not look comfortable.
They both stunk,
They both really stunk, yeah. almost surprisingly, emphatically.
I was shocked when they named him the number one
quarterback. So quickly,
yeah.
Right?
I was shocked. I thought for sure when they both play poorly, okay, let's at least let the veterans start the season. So right. I was shocked. I've been pleasantly surprised by how well he's played. And his offensive line has given him time. I think they've done a pretty good job helping him out.
That's probably the most underreported part of all of this,
yeah.
Right?
But now we're going to come up against a few guys who seem to have no compunction about taking your head off on the Edmonton defensive line.
Coming back to the West.
And we'll see how it is.
Yeah, but I remember the lead up to that first game is, okay, so he is the quarterback, but you almost do the check down. For how long?
Yeah.
You know, what is the circumstance in which he comes out? Are we going to see him? Are there certain packages that are going to be put in there for Drew Tate? And I thought what we learned about Bo Levi Mitchell on Friday probably had less to do with his on-field performance and more to do with where the coaches are with him. Because I'm like you, in that third quarter, I didn't think it was his fault, but it's not out of the realm of possibility to kickstart something. Yeah. Whereas I did think, you know, Mazzoli ran his course. They had to go to Lefevre. That was, I think, Ken Austin probably, you know, feels like he took too much time getting to that change.
Yeah.
But I just wondered if it was the old, you remember, they used to dog Higgins with that all the time. When Henry was here,
right.
You know, Henry struggles, bad Hank, Frank, or whatever. Well, why don't you pull him out and let him watch from the sidelines? That was a big thing. You should pull him out and let him watch from the sidelines. So he pull him out, let him watch from the sidelines every once in a while. Yeah. I wondered if we saw some variation of that on Friday. We did not. That just cements to me Bo Levi Mitchell has a long leash now.
Or maybe they were saving that for Edmonton. Maybe that's a card he didn't want to play right away. But the other reason that I thought they would do that too, Rob, is, of course, with John Cornish out,
yes.
It's and this is no knock on Walter,
yeah.
But he's not as good. I thought, wouldn't you maybe have the other quarterback who does present the running option to maybe give you even one more thing to move that offense? Because Bo Levi can move okay, but he doesn't necessarily move the way Tate does.
No.
So I thought that, again, for another reason, that might have been a chance for him to get in there. So, yeah, you're right. They've given him a long, long leash, or as Rod Black likes to call him, Bo Mitchell.
20 or 30.
He can't make up his mind. He goes, I'm Bo Levi, and then Bo, and they won't catch him unless they will.
20 of 35, his longest completion was 23 yards. You mentioned he scampered twice for 18, but no interceptions, no touchdowns. The one thing that I do believe this is a little bit of that thing that you do when you're talking about the local team is you probably forget about the visitors. I thought Hamilton was really tight on defense. I thought,
Not too bad.
Compared to what they looked like in week one against Saskatchewan or even in the fourth quarter against Edmonton, I thought they were pretty composed.
They've got a pretty good head coach who's
been around the block.
Who clearly was being eaten alive by the team playing the way they did for him. But he's a guy who will get guys to play, and he will get that situation the way he wants it, or it's not going to happen at all. And, yeah, give Hamilton some credit. But, again, you're missing John Cornish. Mm. You're missing some other elements of your offense. You know, that makes you think that possibly they would have gone with the quarterback who's a little bit more of a runner. But there you go.
No John Cornish at practice today. I think everybody was kind of caught off guard yesterday when he didn't appear at the late evening practice. Clearly he's not playing this week.
He's had a setback, according to the
head coach, he's had a setback. to me, and I know Pat and I kicked this around quite a bit in the last couple of weeks, but I do want you to weigh in on it.
Okay.
If he doesn't play till Labor Day, if he rests, I mean, they're not going
not
to.
Not the end of the world.
No, it is. It isn't. I mean, it is a story because he is the reigning most outstanding player. He is a story because he is the face of your franchise. But this is not a guy you take chances with.
Nope. And you know, we've been down this road with Sidney Crosby and a bunch of high-profile guys. Yeah. And when you hear the setback thing, that's never good. That's never good.
Right.
Because you know that these are guys who want to be back in there. And for them to admit that it's a setback, it has to be a significant thing where I can't do it. So that concerns me. And hopefully he's back in 3 weeks, two, 3 weeks. Hopefully maybe Labor Day, maybe by Thanksgiving. And maybe he only plays the playoffs. Or maybe, the rest of the season. It's not beyond the realm of comprehension that a guy's concussion problems can cause that problem.
Conversely, and I guess it's convenience more than anything, but since they are playing the Eskimos, the whole story surrounding Fred Stamps intrigues me.
Yeah.
Saw him take a vicious hit against Winnipeg, came back in that game, got carted off at the end of that game, spent the night in hospital, flew back on his own on Friday, showed up at practice. Coach says he's ready to go. Reading the Edmonton...
And a World Cup soccer player.
Well, reading the Edmonton Sun, I'm a little bit disturbed by, Chris Jones saying, I really don't know what his injury was. That's for the trainers, and they say he's ready to go. I don't buy that. Do you buy that?
I think I would have some idea what... What he's saying is, for legal purposes, he's not the guy to go in and do the diagnosis. He has to trust his medical staff. I think that's what he's trying to say in football talk.
Yeah.
Is he interested? Is his head in the training room saying, are you good to go? Of course it is. But the training staff are the ones he counts on to tell him whether this guy should be there or not.
Is this a story or am I making a mountain out of a molehill here? Because here we are talking about...
Well, we keep saying it. We know. We hear all this stuff. We know what the science is.
We've got
a
current lawsuit going on in the league.
Yeah.
Right? With Bruce... Arlan Bruce, the third, suing the CFL and the BC lines and all the members.
The NFL is rife with these things.
Right. And to me, it just, I have had no problem with what the Stampeders have said. I've had no problem with what John Cornish has said, all of that. And yet, you look up north and it's real easy to go, geez, are they taking care of Fred Stamps? We're asking these questions.
But that's the mystery of the headshot stuff that we've seen, Rob, and you've seen it over the years. We've seen guys who are back after 2 weeks legitimately that they are over it, that it isn't a problem. And then we've seen guys whose careers are over with one hit. Mm-hmm. So you just don't know. There are some guys who react better than others. And is John Cornish one of those guys who maybe just this was the one hit that was in the wrong place? Or is it something he'll be back from quickly? Fred Stamps might be a guy who neurologically is able to do the things that they're saying he can do.
Right.
But you and I, we're not doctors. We're not neurologists.
No.
We only know what we've seen.
Exactly. And to me, it was a little bit more of what I heard. Stampeders.
Well, what are you hearing?
What I heard was what was written in the Edmonton Sun from Chris Jones.
Well, it must be true.
Well, he's a tough guy. He's back. Yeah. I don't know what was the problem, but the trainer says he's okay. You and I have been around sports long enough to know the code words, bell rung, all of these things. I guess it's that heightened sense of here we have Dave Dickinson who retired because of concussions, Demetrius Tsoumpas who retired because of concussions.
Yep.
We're watching John Cornish go through this. Last week we had Nick Lewis, kind of just missing some time, and he's coming back. And then we watch this game in which Fred Stamps, arguably one of the most important pieces for the Edmonton Eskimos, goes down, spends a night in hospital. Now, maybe it has nothing to do with the head and all of that, but it sure looked like it was in that vicinity.
Yeah.
And I just felt like I heard code words again from Chris Jones. And a lot of it is coincidental because the two teams are playing, and maybe I'm not paying attention to the injuries of other teams right now.
Well, as
but
I
it
said,
just
we
seems
saw,
a contrast.
We saw the two classic examples in the World Cup where guys clearly got concussed and then told the training staff, I want to play, and the training staff let them go back out there.
Yeah.
And one guy, the German guy, ended up passing out on the field the second time and being taken off the stretcher.
Yeah.
So it's not beyond the realm of possibilities that guys are talking trainers into it or coaches into it or hiding the symptoms.
Sure.
But, until I had a doctor, a neurologist, would tell me that they'd examined Stamps and here's what they found, I'm not going to suggest he's healthy or not healthy.
Well, and I don't want to suggest it either. I just, as I said,
you might get a good hint as to where he's, excuse the expression, where his head is at in the game on Thursday. If he looks like an ineffectual player, you know, then you might get some answers.
Well, and certainly the lead up to that game, we'll be talking to people up in Edmonton, and they can shed some more light on it. Just was a horrific hit. And we're so, you know, and maybe here in Calgary more so, but so hypersensitive to these things now and watching them. And, you know, we talked about labor, you know, an hour ago.
Yeah.
And when the leaking of material was taking place, you know, the concussion issue seemed very much a priority for the Players Association. I'm not sure at the end of the day that that carried any momentum.
Well, we talked about this in the hockey context too, but what the heck is Dwight Anderson doing? These are your contemporaries. These are guys you're playing hard against. But you also have to understand about live and let live. I mean, that rule has been in place. The hit that he put on has been banned for 3-4 years now. What's he doing still doing that to a fellow employee of another guy in the league? What's that all about? And then going around and doing the pound in the chest. I know you got traded this week and you're probably your head's in a whirl, et cetera. Mm. But why are guys doing that to each other? Taking the cheap shot on a guy's head. It's upsetting to see guys do that. We know Dwight from here. I've heard great stories about how kind he was and his mother's a lovely person, et cetera. But you just shake your head. Because you could be next. If that's the temperature you want the league to be at, then you're going to get burned eventually, too.
The Big Show is brought to you by The Comedy Cave. It's cool inside The Comedy Cave. Cool people, cool deals. Bring in 8 or more friends, stag, sports team, or night out. Get half-price admission all summer long. Visit thecomedycave.com. Later on in the program, Chris Johnson from Sportsnet will join us. We'll talk arbitration with him. Helene St. James from the Detroit Free Press is going to join us at 5 o'clock. But when we come back, I want to ask Bruce a little bit about, is the Emperor not wearing clothes in Detroit? Is something changed with Kenny Holland's empire? We'll talk about that next. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
If it's on the 200 by 85, it's right here first. Calgary's home for the National Hockey League. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Talking sports in the afternoon. This is The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Talking a lot of CFL today. We'll be doing it all week tomorrow. We are anticipating having a conversation with Glenn Johnson, the director of officiating for the CFL.
Not Chris Johnson.
What?
Not Chris Johnson.
No. Chris Johnson's on this program.
Today.
Yes.
Tomorrow's
Glenn Johnson. Tomorrow. You got to get your Johnson sorted out, Bruce. I hate to tell you.
He doesn't have to call me Mr. Johnson.
Later on today, though, Helene St. James from the Detroit Free Press, the Red Wings. I know you kind of keep your tabs on this team. I mean, why wouldn't you? Right? They've been one of the more dominant teams over the last couple of decades. Boy, they've had a kind of a rough off season, haven't they?
Well, they've had a. Rough isn't the word I'd use. It's kind of like nothing. It's kind of been. It's like
okay.
It's a Seinfeld summer.
It's a show
summer,
about nothing.
It's a summer about nothing.
Yeah.
It's about opportunities that they maybe didn't take advantage of, money that they might have spent that they couldn't spend. I think it's about maybe finally their mojo being out a little bit. What rescued them for this latest generation was, of course, the Zetterberg, Datsyuk, Steeles late in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
They were able to do that.
Yep.
And they were able to parlay that with the big defenseman. Those things don't exist anymore. They don't seem to have anybody who's a steal in the fifth and sixth round ready to go. And I think a lot of people around the organization are looking at each other and going like, you know, as you said, is the Emperor lost his clothes?
Well, you know, there's
the idea of Kenny Holland standing naked at Joe Louis is not something I want to put into anybody's head.
No, but it's kind of those narratives that are portrayed during this season. And I'll give you one just to kind of illustrate what I'm talking about. The San Jose Sharks traded away Doug Murray last year and traded away Ryan Clough. And even into this season, there was a lot of guys on our network, you know, doing the primetime shows that were saying, there's a general manager that gets it. He got out in front of it, started his rebuild, got Raffy Torres and everything. Yet, this has been absolutely one of the worst off seasons ever for the San Jose Sharks, to the point that he's using the word rebuilding.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they can't do anything right now without getting browbeaten.
I think that's also his owner. And he understands he's got 1 year left.
I understood. Yeah. But there is this tendency within the season to kind of, you know, portray these guys and you know, base on past glory. But it just sent, I get this sense. I mean, Dan Cleary coming back did not go over well. Mm. They wanted, I believe, Dan Boyle. Didn't get Dan Boyle. They were not a player in free agency. And, Bruce, I go back a couple of seasons to where I think there was almost this sense that Zach Parise and Ryan Suter, one if not both, were going to go to Detroit. They end up in Minnesota.
Happens fast, doesn't it?
It does. And then so, we got Stephen Weiss, and that hasn't worked out. And I just, you know, the other thing I'll throw up there was, and I was saying to you off the air, is I think you watch an organization from afar and you have a certain particular opinion of it. But sometimes you got to listen to what's being talked about in the market. And Mike Babcock had a rough week last week, radio-wise, having to defend, you know, were players not coming to Detroit because of him? You know, that they're constantly stream of you know, coaches leaving. And to me, I thought he was developing guys. Yeah. Guys have gone to be head coaches elsewhere. Yeah. But you know, there isn't that. So all of a sudden, Mike Babcock, who could do no wrong, is
under
the
coach with Babcock, and all of a sudden, you know, they're taller and smarter and faster.
Right.
Their coaches are.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, and this is the dynamic of modern pro sports. And the LeBron James case is the perfect example where he's able to go to a place and say, let's come here. I want love from Minnesota. So trade Wiggins, you know. I mean, he can do those things.
Yeah, yeah.
And for a long time, I talked to Kenny Holland about 3-4 years ago for one of my many books, and I asked him, I said, why, you know, Detroit's not exactly the most scenic place. It's not, you don't grow up thinking of Detroit as a place you want to play. What is it? He said, we have a great group of guys who help us recruit, players and a core group.
Right.
They don't have those guys anymore. Nick Lidstrom is not there to pick up the phone and get you the guy you want. They don't have that kind of sexy guy to get you to the next stage. And that's a concern for any team. It's one of the problems for Calgary at the moment.
Agreed.
Giordano might be a kind of guy who can get on the phone to some people and bring him in, but by and large, there's nobody who can phone. You know, the Schultz thing was up in Edmonton was really interesting because it was Ottawa, Vancouver, and Edmonton at the end.
Yep.
And according to what I heard, it was the phone calls, some coffee, and Gretzky to get him to go there. Those things matter, and Detroit's guys aren't there. Stevie Y's building down in Tampa.
Yeah.
Stevie ain't picking up the phone to say go be a Red Wing. Nick Lidstrom's off on his new life. There's nobody to pick up the phone and say, hey, this is the place to go. And I think that's part of it. And listen, playing for Babcock, he's a demanding guy. He's going to tell you what you have to do, and you're going to have to do it.
I would be remiss if I tried to cast them off because I think, you know, as we talk about, you know, so much of what Detroit was able to do was go out and get free agents and plug them in, you know, over the years. They do have, you know, I don't think you throw the baby out with the bathwater. I like Nyquist. I like Tatar.
Yeah.
Yurko, I should say. I like Danny DeKeyser. I think they have some good young players. But what is different to me, Bruce, is that they aren't able to just say, hey, we're interested. I'm coming. You know, the prime example in all of that would have been Marian Hossa, right?
Yep.
Promised bigger money in Edmonton, went to Detroit to win.
For 1 year, yeah.
Right. There's lots of examples of those guys. That's dried up for them. Now they trot out this weekend the building. To me, look, building, you know, they play in one of the older buildings. It's whatever you want to call it. It needs to be replaced.
Isn't it the oldest? No, Nassau County College.
Yeah, it will be.
No, the oldest building with an NHL team in it.
Okay. Just a matter of how you ask the question.
Ooh, shot there. Yeah,
no, yeah. But you know, you almost have to do that as a publicity stunt to get people feeling good about you.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder where, let's be perfectly honest, did not hurt them going to the East last year.
Nope.
I'm not sure they're a playoff team in the West.
No. The travel combined with all you know, the teams that are out here and they're loaded up. I think it's a good thing for them to be in the East and helps them in that sense. But it just, as I say, it happens so fast. That's why I admire Chicago for they win the Cup, but their cap thing is all screwed up, and they end up losing 4 or 5 major guys, and then they were able to retool people. And
2010, yeah.
Yeah, and do it again.
Yeah.
And get back there again. I really admire the teams that put that off as long as they can. But eventually you do hit that wall, and I think Detroit is getting close to it. There's no free agents to come in. There's no rainmaker guys anymore who come to the market. You have to basically trade for those guys. Steve Stamkos might want to go to Detroit. Put that and see if he favors it. But you know what I'm saying?
I do. I mean, we had this conversation.
How do you get that guy? Except you finish down at the bottom the way the Flames have been doing it, and they're assembling quality guys. That's just about the only way. And during the playoffs, people going on, oh, about L.A. and this, that, and the other thing. Listen, L.A., Pittsburgh, Chicago, look at the teams. Everyone except Boston in that situation was a team that spent considerable time at the bottom and played horrible hockey for their fans.
And not only spent time at the bottom, but most of those teams were, well, in one case in Pittsburgh, were on their way out.
Yeah.
You know, Chicago, not that anybody ever thought Chicago would move, but they were beginning to have questions about the, you know, how valid that organization was. How many times do we think L.A.'s lifted themselves off the mat only to fall back? I agree.
I just hate, would hate for it to be that that's the only way to win a Stanley Cup is to go down and spend your time at the bottom. If that's Gary's idea of what he wants, it's his business, go ahead. But
well,
I'm just...
You don't have free agency like NBA has free agency.
Exactly.
Right?
The players are being offered. I was having this conversation with one of the agents I talked to today.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, look at the NBA. They put in the short-term contract thing. You can't go with the long contract. But LeBron's taken 2 years. Ain't nobody taking 2 years in the NHL. Ain't nobody taking 3 years.
No, term is big now.
Yeah, and they get the so what do you got? No chance at movement.
Yeah.
And Detroit is kind of a case example of not being able to do that anymore, to find a guy in the market to come in and do that stuff. And at the time when they needed Chanty to come in and play for them, and Brett Hull and all those kind of guys, and Dominic Hasek, there was a stream of those guys out there. It's not available anymore, and I think the league is the poorer for it. I know they love it. Oh, yeah, the cycle, and you're up, now you're down, you're up, now you're down. To me, to poison your fans for 3 straight years so you can get low draft picks is the only way to win. It's a terrible message to send.
Well, and it's no guarantee either.
No.
Right?
Well, as Edmonton has proven.
Yeah. My only argument, my counter to that is, you know, there are many people, we have Michael Grange on all the time talking about the NBA,
yeah,
that, you know, here we're talking about parity in the NHL, and, you know, it's incredible. We got a Stanley Cup champion 2 of the last 3 years coming from the same city. That's whereas you had Miami, 4 straight NBA Finals. They won a couple of them.
There's a couple of reasons why basketball is more prone to
that. There's a little, yeah. There's a difference in that. But could you imagine if Sidney Crosby was coming available on July 1st?
Sure.
Can you imagine what a...
And it's missing an opportunity, I think, for the league. I just wrote a thing this morning about what the World Cup taught us this summer. And I've been talking about this for a few years. But the World Cup, the soccer people are totally cynical. They're about each league having 4 or 5 super teams, each of those super teams loaded with superstars, and then going to the World Cup and having globally known personalities that they can market. And I think that continuing to do the franchise equity thing, which the NHL is doing and the NBA is doing, I think it's a mistake. I think each of those leagues should have 20 elite teams with the best players in the biggest markets on them, have second divisions that maybe can do it. To me, soccer is showing you how to make the money and how to be attractive to young people. Because young people don't want to spend 3 years waiting for you to get a shot at Connor McDavid. Young people want to win now. And that's why they watch TV shows where people sing and dance and they can be stars overnight.
So you're talking about, and I believe we've had this conversation before, is about having, you know, relegation. That you would have a tier, top tier and a bottom tier, and then the bottom two teams or whatever could move down
and
bottom
two could go. But that's not the most important part about it. It's unfortunately, it's accepting the fact that if you're a city the size of Calgary, that you're not likely to win. Well, Calgary is an exception because we've got so much frickin' money here. But let's say you're a city like Edmonton.
We do right now.
Yeah.
We didn't 10 years ago.
Well.
Right?
As long as the dollar's where it is now.
Yeah.
But it would be possible. But for an Edmonton or a Winnipeg, it's over. And we say, well, we can't have that. Everybody's got to have a chance to win, blah, blah, blah. The soccer people don't give a damn anymore if Huddersfield wins or if you're Mallorca in the La Liga or whatever it is. They don't care anymore.
Well, it's a long way to go from Detroit, but that's okay. I'll take you there. Because let me throw the other one.
Because Detroit can't do what's happening in soccer.
Right.
So I guess my point.
Okay. No, but what I want to talk about is... You bring up the relegation component, you know, create whatever, you know, a premiership in hockey, which would be 15 or 20 teams. Did you hear Silver in the NBA talking about perhaps a midseason tournament? Like I believe the FA Cup is the midseason, right?
Well, the FA Cup goes all year round.
Okay, so which one am I talking about? He was literally talking about stopping the league, the NBA, and playing a tournament.
Amongst what? International teams?
No, amongst the NBA teams.
Well, it could be something like that, maybe. I mean,
or any professional
team.
The
FA Cup goes over the course of the year. Right. They play the final in May, but it's where fourth division teams can play.
Yeah, okay. So,
there's a possibility, but there's no minor leagues of basketball anymore to do that with. Mm. The sum total of basketball at the professional level is the NBA.
Right.
And then the Continental League, which is a development league.
But the thought of that
the
was.
D-League, which is a development
league. But the thought of that was that, you know, by December, you have a bunch of teams out. But if all of a sudden you play a round robin tournament at the end of January, who knows who could win? Somebody can go on a hot streak.
Well, you talked to John Collins from the NHL, and John Collins wants the playoffs to be like the March Madness. He doesn't want it to go on ad nauseum. He wants the final round to be the most important one. And his point is, and you've talked about this 100 times, the first two rounds of the NHL playoffs are the best.
Absolutely.
It's where everything happens. The last two are the exhaustion or my team's out or whatever. It doesn't work. And if John Collins has his way, you're going to see that they do those kinds of things. The thing I suggested, Rob, and we may have done this in a previous show, is maybe at the end of the year you have a tournament within your division to determine who comes out and plays. I know they did it in the old days, but now that you, let's say, have five teams in a division or six teams, maybe you play a little tournament at the end of the year, and that's like the qualifying thing to get into that final. You know what I mean? You have separate tournaments which each mean something different and get you there.
Here's my question. Will it ever happen? Can it ever happen? Do we have in North America the ability to stop what we've done in the case of 100 years and say, you know what, we're going to change it? And the reason I ask that, Bruce, is I think we'd all agree that the shootout, the loser point as it's called, has impacted the game. And there's, you know, lots of people who said maybe a win in regulation should be worth 3 points. And we have drug our heels on dealing with that because we only want to go to a certain point. What you're talking about is radical. What other people are talking about, these are radical changes. I know that they can't do a mid-season tournament in the NBA till the next collective bargaining agreement because it needs to be bargained. Will we ever see a North American sport ever do something like that? Can any of these sports ever? I mean, they're great to talk about. They're awesome
debates. As long as the commissioners are the kind of guys they are now and the owners feel that way, no, of course not. But if you were able to go to an owners' meeting in the NHL and say, you know what, here's the deal.
Mm-hmm.
If we had 22 teams, 24 teams, we'd make so much more money. We'd be able to do things in a different and you know, yeah, a few of you guys might spend some time in the second division, but we cut you in for some. We would be a global spectacle. What was the thing about the World Cup? You know, Rob, a generation ago, kids didn't know three soccer players internationally. Everybody knew everybody, and they had the jerseys. They knew Ronaldo. They knew Suarez had bitten people. They knew that Messi was a genius.
Mm-hmm.
They were all set for it. And they've created a global spectacle, which is making a ton of money. And I'm saying that somebody, and I don't know who it would be, and it would be a risk, can do the same thing with a North American sport. Nobody wants to see Winnipeg versus St. Louis on a Tuesday night in February. We don't need that. What you need are always appointment viewing things. That's what John Collins talks about.
I wonder, in Europe, if they have a similar conversation.
I'll settle the Middle East in our next segment.
Speaking
of impossible tasks.
You know, I wonder if you talk to people who follow the premiership, if they started from scratch again, how they would build it.
Yeah.
Would they build it the same way?
Some people hate it there because, we can't all get in on it. And there's all sorts of financial shenanigans. I mean, there's some people who feel like the La Liga in Spain is bankrupting the Spanish financial system. The banks are so leveraged for these idiots to keep buying soccer players.
Sure.
But, you know.
I'm all for the conversations. Yeah. I just don't know if they ever get past the pie in the sky. You know what I mean?
If the consumers can get their hands on it again, I mean on the product again, maybe something changes. Because the consumer, what the World Cup says to me is that the consumer wants only the best and doesn't want a ton of people spread out over a bunch of teams, et cetera. They want to have the best concentrated, and they want to know that I can turn in on Sunday afternoon for 3 hours of the best in the world.
But I don't know how you can say that with the numbers and the draw that these leagues have now. I mean, you know, it was
You only show them it would make more money, I guess, is the only thing I could say. Because, you're right. They're into it so much, and it's the history of it.
Because we're going to 32 teams in the NHL.
Yep. That's Gary's last act.
As opposed to what you were talking about, which may make more sense or, you know, whatever.
Still the franchise model.
Right.
But the franchise money comes, and it washes through the system once, and then what are you left with? Half the teams waste it. Another quarter of the teams misspend it. And then maybe somebody makes it.
And you dilute the pool.
Yeah, and there you go. And then you're left standing around looking and saying, who's going to buy Ottawa now? Because we've exhausted most of the guys who are suckers for this.
All right, coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, the big story. It's football flavored, I'll tell you that right now. Also, headlines coming up later on in the 5 o'clock hour. Helene St. James from the Detroit Free Press will join us. We'll talk about the Detroit Red Wings in a little more depth. Chris Johnson as well from Sportsnet. It is arb season in the NHL, but it's the big story around the corner. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The best insiders, the breaking sports news when it happens, tons of play-by-play. Calgary, this is your sports radio. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.